from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, and today for Michael Krasny. Coming up this hour, California coronavirus cases are expected to surge in the coming weeks. How prepared are we? Also, experts say tracking and disclosure of infections are critical to containing an outbreak, but not all public health officials agree on how much disclosure is needed. We'll talk about the debate raging over privacy versus transparency. Then at 9:30, as the coronavirus crisis continues to strain the healthcare system, hospitals face difficult choices of how to allocate limited medical resources like ventilators needed for COVID-19 patients. We'll hear from experts on the questions involving medical ethics. We'll get started right after this news. Good morning and welcome to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, in today for Michael Krasny. Later in the hour, we'll be looking at ethical questions looming ahead as the COVID-19 pandemic could force hospitals and doctors to make some excruciating decisions about access to life-saving treatment. But first, as cases in California are expected to surge in the coming weeks, we're going to talk about how prepared the state is for a spike in illness and death. And we'll also look at how data is being shared as this pandemic has spread. Not all states and counties are taking the same approach to releasing specific data. And here in the Bay Area, there's a debate raging between epidemiologists and public health officials over just what to reveal. Joining us now is Thomas Fuller, San Francisco bureau chief for the New York Times, and LA Times reporter Anita Shabria. Welcome to both of you.
Hi, Scott.
And let me begin with you, Anita, if I could. What are the latest numbers in terms of cases, hospitalizations, and deaths in California?
Well, it's very much a moving target, but as of this morning, the LA Times is reporting 6,358 confirmed cases and 132 deaths.
And how does that trend line look from, say, Friday?
Well, we're really seeing numbers go up fairly dramatically. I personally think that we should not be focusing on that number of confirmed cases because of all the problems and the slowness with our testing. So really the number that we're looking at more and that the governor put out on Friday is the number of patients in ICUs. And what we saw is that on Friday, we had about 200 patients in ICU units because of the virus in California. And Saturday, that jumped to 410. So that's a pretty significant jump in the number of people needing critical care for it, but still at a level that we're not, you know, seeing the overwhelming circumstances that they're seeing in New York.
And in terms of the increase in hospitalizations and ICU cases, I mean, does it seem that anything that's been done so far is helping, or is it too soon to say in terms of flattening that curve?
Most of the experts I have spoken to really put the next week or two is when we'll know. But out of the Bay Area, we're the measures have been strongest and longest. We're hearing emergency room doctors cautiously say that they're not overwhelmed and they're hopeful that what we did will work. But I think one thing to remember is that we don't know yet, and also we didn't do it evenly throughout California. So what comes out of the Bay Area in terms of social distancing might look very different than what comes out of LA in social distancing.
And just because of the mobility or the fact that people are just taking different levels of precaution in different places?
The mobility and how quickly and severely we did things. I think you saw a crackdown in the Bay Area at least a couple days earlier, where LA was still, you know, maybe not as certain how social distancing was going to work for them. And so you are going to see variations over time in how different places enacted it and how seriously they took it.
It seemed like, I think it was last week, sometimes you lose track of time here, but President Trump was saying, wouldn't it be nice if we could reopen the country or at least parts of it on Easter? And then yesterday he extended those stay-at-home guidelines until April 30th, at least, I think you'd have to say. What are state officials saying about that? And, you know, when do you think, how coordinated, I guess, is what we're doing with what the federal government is doing?
I think California and Governor Newsom has been very clear that he will do what he thinks is best for the state. I think you saw, you know, a lot of diplomacy when the president said that, with Governor Newsom simply saying that, but, you know, what the federal government does might not be right for California. I do not think you will see a rush to remove these social restrictions because the feds do something different.
That's LA Times reporter Anita Chabrier. We're talking with her and Thomas Fuller from the New York Times about the course of this pandemic in California. And let me ask you, Anita, if I could, where are we with testing capacity and how important is that? Because we've heard a wide range of things in terms of who can get a test. And we've heard reports of people showing up with symptoms and being told basically to go home and quarantine themselves. They don't have enough tests. They're really focusing on testing healthcare workers, which is understandable. But what are you hearing?
We are still hearing that many people cannot get the test. And that even when you get the test, you're waiting sometimes 6, 7, maybe longer days, number of days to get the results. We are nowhere near where we need to be on testing, even though it has improved dramatically.
And what about you, Thomas? Are you hearing anything different? That's one thing. The governor doesn't spend a lot of time. He gives the number of tests, but it does not necessarily the availability of the tests. How concerning is that?
Well, you know, I was looking at the comparison between New York and California, and obviously New York has so many more cases, 10 times as many cases as we do, but they have 172,000 tests that have come back. And Anita, you might know more up-to-date data, but before the weekend, the governor's office was announcing that California had results from a fraction of that, around 30,000. And 64,000 tests were pending, so that speaks to that lag. I just don't think we have a full picture of what's happening in California. And I have a colleague who went to Kaiser with symptoms that seemed very clear to be COVID-19, and went to the emergency room, was turned away. Because they said only healthcare workers and people who are hospitalized could be tested.
Hmm. Anita, what are your thoughts about that? I mean, I guess in some ways, if you have the symptoms, you should assume that you have coronavirus, but it would be nice to know for sure, wouldn't it?
I think it's on a personal level, of course, you want to know for sure. I think at this point, because of the lack of testing, a lot of doctors are assuming that you have it. And proceeding like that. But I think that the larger picture is that without good testing, and it's not just doing the test, it's the information that's getting reported back. A lot of labs weren't reporting back negative tests, for example. They were only reporting positive tests, those labs that were reporting. So in terms of the state's picture of what's going on, yes, they had some tests come back, but how many people tested negative? So what percentage of people have it? We don't know. We are, the one thing I hear over and over and over again from the experts is we are flying blind into this because we simply don't have the data. And I really think that fixing that has to be a priority so that we can get a handle on at least where we are.
And wouldn't you think that would be something the federal government would be sending out guidelines to the states about?
There are some guidelines. The Vice President Pence yesterday sent out a letter to hospital administrators asking them to voluntarily report their testing data. That's sort of a loose effort to start some kind of centralized collection, but again, voluntary. You're just not seeing a real urgency even now from the federal government to provide some kind of overarching framework of how this is going to work in terms of testing.
And Thomas, you had a really interesting article over the weekend about data and how much data counties are releasing and this struggle, as you described it, between privacy and public transparency, a tug of war is the phrase you used. So describe that. What is the tug of war over exactly?
It's really interesting. We were talking about inconsistency. You know, LA will tell you in each neighborhood how many positive tests there have been, or, you know, residents from those neighborhoods. And in the Bay Area, you usually get the data just by county. Outside of California, you'll have a state like Florida, which provides very rich data in a dashboard that, you know, nursing homes affected, and they have maps, and they have age brackets and gender, and a very informative dashboard. And here in the Bay Area, you have a lot of counties that will just give you the number of cases in the county. And when you ask them if they can break it down by city, they say, no, we don't do that. We don't want to do that. So there's a debate over this, but there's also, I think, anger where people say, hey, wait a second. Why, if you have this data, why aren't you releasing it?
And what do they say?
The answers are different by county, but for instance, Santa Clara County told me that it was because of HIPAA, that because if they were to release data by city, they feared that people might be identified. I ran that justification past some bioethicists, and one of them said it's ridiculous that aggregate data needs to be shared, and the likelihood of someone being identified in aggregate data is tiny. And HIPAA itself, which is the medical privacy law passed under Bill Clinton, that law has exceptions for times of emergency. So I don't actually think that the justification is correct.
Well, and as you point out in the article, it's ironic that this debate and sort of tendency toward more privacy, less disclosure, is happening in Silicon Valley, which, after all, thrives on data and sells people's personal data for profit.
Right. And there are a few different sort of angles here. One of them is just on a basic level, we live in an open society. Does the public have the right to know? I mean, just on a very basic level. Another level is how much data is available to researchers who can then, epidemiologists who can then try and model on that data. And the answer there is that they're very frustrated, and that I was told most of the models are done on the basis of data from China and Korea and sometimes Italy, because we just don't have the data out there. And so that raises questions as well, that you're basing our models, which we talk so much about societies that are obviously different from ours.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Michael Krasny. We're talking about coronavirus testing and how to balance patient privacy and the public's interest in being informed, and also the latest status of the pandemic in California. Our guests are Thomas Fuller, San Francisco bureau chief with the New York Times, and Anita Chabrier. She's a staff writer with the LA Times. And you can give us a call. We'd love to hear from you this morning, 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch if you prefer on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or there's email as well. It's forum@kqed.org. I was interested, Thomas, over, I guess it was last week, when LA Mayor Eric Garcetti was talking about how well the shelter-in-place orders were working in LA County. And he said, I've been looking at movement data in the county, and it seemed that people in LA County were actually moving around much less than people in other parts of Southern California. It was so interesting to me. What are you finding in terms of what other local governments are doing to access and use this kind of data in the middle of this pandemic?
Well, I remember hearing that comment as well. There's a paradox there, which is that we have this very strict medical privacy law, which, you know, is on a personal level, making sure that people aren't identified. But at the same time, cell phone data is being widely sold, commercialized. So the idea that we have privacy in this situation is probably not true. And you know, the other comparison that a lot of people make is from here and across the Pacific at some of the Asian nations that have been very successful in battling the virus. Taiwan comes to mind, Singapore comes to mind, South Korea. And they have been using a combination of cell phone data, but also they've just been releasing a lot more aggregate data on the spread of the virus to their citizens. They will, for instance, tell you, oh, there's a cluster here in this church. This person seems to be, this case, I should say, these are all anonymized cases. Usually the number, number 301 and has a relationship with number 303. Sometimes in Taiwan, they'll say, here are three cases that are a family cluster, and the authorities there, I'm told by researchers, say it's important to have that information out there because then people understand the dynamics of spread. For instance, they understand how easily it's transmitted within family. So there's also a big disconnect between how we are reporting and sharing, how the public has access to this data and how Asian countries are doing it. And as someone who lived in Asia for 16 years, I find this very paradoxical that our open society has a lot less access to this data than some of these authoritarian countries.
Yeah. And Anita, do you have a sense that there is any conversation happening at the statewide level in terms of giving counties guidance in terms of how much data they should release and how much specificity there should be? Would that, would that matter if the state gave that guidance? I know we have really 58 different ways of dealing with this in each of the counties.
I've actually been tremendously disappointed by the state of California's transparency. And, I think everything Thomas just said lays it out and explains the dangers of that lack of transparency so clearly. California has, as a state, not been a leader in releasing this kind of data, and really has, you see other states, as he said, really doing a much better job than we are. And I think part of that is that there's an acknowledgement at the state level that our data is not that reliable and is not that good. But at the same time, I think that, I personally would love to see more of it out there in the way that Thomas is talking about so that we can get a better sense of how this is moving. And I would say in the long term, barring a vaccine or some kind of drug treatment, drug therapy for this, really our only way of backing off of severe statewide social restrictions is to have that granular level of data so that we can impose social restrictions in a more targeted way. But without releasing that data, without that transparency combined with the testing, our only weapon is these massive social restrictions.
Or I'll give out the phone number again if you'd like to join our conversation. It's 866-733-6786. And let's start in Kentfield. And Mimi, you're next. Welcome.
Yes, good morning. I have one comment and one question. My comment is that I have a friend who had a cough, was given the test, and never received a notification of either positive or negative. The cough has resolved, and her assumption is that negatives are not being reported even to the patient. I'm wondering if you know anything about that. And number two, question. Here in Marin, we have a limited number of ICU beds. If a patient from Marin is hospitalized in San Francisco, does that count as a case in San Francisco or in Marin, where our case count seems very low?
Well, let's start with the testing notification first. Mimi, do you want to, Anita, do you want to take that?
Absolutely. Every patient should be receiving a test result, positive or negative. I would encourage her to follow up with whoever gave the test to her. I know in LA specifically, we are certain that negatives are being sent out. So she should receive a test result one way or the other. And in terms of where the case would be reported, if she was from Marin and tested in Marin, it should show up in their testing numbers. But in terms of hospitalization numbers, a person in a hospital in LA would fall into their, or in San Francisco would fall into their numbers.
Yeah. And what if you happen to be, tested for some reason in one county and, live in a neighboring county, and you test positive, would that pop up in the county it was taken? I suppose the test was taken.
Genuinely, I can see a scenario like that where it's counted multiple times or not counted at all. we just don't really have very good monitoring or guidance in place. So I think it's catch as catch can for a lot of these counties.
Yeah. Here's a tweet from Michael who says, I'd like to know if I've been in contact with people who test positive. A map by neighborhood would be good. And if they worked retail, a list of their employers. And I think, Thomas, that's the kind of specificity that makes people in the public health system very nervous. But you can see why the concern is there.
Right, right. Well, you know, I think what happened here in terms of what information gets released is that public health officers fell back on the systems that they were using for previous outbreaks. And these were much smaller outbreaks, maybe measles, maybe tuberculosis. You could make the argument that, well, this is not something that is threatening the community at large in the same way that coronavirus is threatening us today. So I think it's a question maybe of sort of fighting a previous war in this case. But I've certainly heard that comment quite often from people who say, you know, I would be more motivated, you know, and I would have more trust. That's a key word in this.
Motivated to what? To follow the guidelines, or what is that?
Well, you know, it's funny. You hear two sides of that argument. I've heard health experts say, if you are told that, hey, there are three cases in your city, then you feel it more, you know, or if it's in your zip code, your neighborhood, you are more responsive to that because we heard in the early stages of this how people felt like this was abstract. Oh, is the media blowing this up? Is this really a threat to us here in the U.S.? And we heard about people who weren't following the social distancing rules, guidelines. And so one argument is, well, if you make it more immediate to people and say, hey, this is in your neighborhood, that is a big motivating factor. On the other hand, health officials in the Bay Area say, look, the virus is everywhere. We just don't have the testing to prove it. And so what's the use? This is their argument. What's the use of having this neighborhood by neighborhood? Because it's a false picture.
Yeah. Anita, just about a half a minute left, but what are you going to be looking for? We're, of course, looking for this fearing and looking for this surge of hospitalizations and cases and perhaps ICU admissions. But what are you looking for in the coming few days?
Where the flattening occurs. So we are hopeful that we'll see flattening. But there is a fear that curve will flatten just above our capacity, which would draw out the crisis longer at an unsustainable level. So what we're looking for is if we do flatten the curve, do we flatten it above our capacity or below our capacity?
And that is, in fact, what we'll be talking about in the next half hour, some of the medical ethical questions that are going to arise if that does result. Anita Chabrier from the Los Angeles Times, Thomas Fuller from the New York Times, San Francisco Bureau. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Forum will continue after a short break. And as I said, when we come back, we'll be talking about medical ethics.